and welcome to PageTurn, the Largo Public Library podcast. I'm your host, Hannah. PageTurn is a monthly podcast bringing you information about great books, library news, and fun library tidbits from your favorite programs, as well as a Spanish language book review from Victor. But as always, we start with Reader's Advisory. As a botanist, Robin Wall Kimmerer has been trained to ask questions of nature with the tools of science. As a member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation, she embraces the notion that plants and animals are our oldest teachers. Kimmerer brings these lenses of knowledge together to show that the awakening of a wider ecological consciousness requires the acknowledgement and celebration of our reciprocal relationship with the rest of the living world. For only when we can hear the languages of other beings are we capable of understanding the generosity of the earth and learning to give our own gifts in return. Today's Reader's Advisory is Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Braiding Sweetgrass is part botany book and part book of gratitude. The essays are personal and engaging. The writing is pointed and poetic. Readers may also enjoy As Long as Grass Grows by Dina Gilio Whittaker. Through the unique lens of indigenized environmental justice, Indigenous researcher and activist Dina Gilio Whittaker explores the fraught history of treaty violations, struggles for food and water security, and protection of sacred sites, while highlighting the important leadership of Indigenous women in this centuries-long struggle. As Long as Grass Grows gives readers an accessible history of Indigenous resistance to government and corporate incursions on their lands, and offers new approaches to environmental justice, activism, and policy. Throughout 2016, the Standing Rock protest put a national spotlight on Indigenous activists, but it also underscored how little Americans know about the long-time historical tensions between Native peoples and the mainstream environmental movement. Ultimately, she argues, modern environmentalists must look to the history of Indigenous resistance for wisdom and inspiration in our common fight for a just and sustainable future. Or, All We Can Save, edited by Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson and Catherine Keeble Wilkinson. There is a renaissance blooming in the climate movement, leadership that is more characteristically feminine and more faithfully feminist, rooted in compassion, connection, creativity, and collaboration. While it's clear that women and girls are vital voices and agents of change for this planet, they are too often missing from the proverbial table. More than a problem of bias, it's a dynamic that sets us up for failure. To change everything, we need everyone. All We Can Save illuminates the expertise and insights of dozens of diverse women leading on climate in the United States. Scientists, journalists, farmers, lawyers, teachers, activists, innovators, wonks, and designers across generations, geographies, and race, and aims to advance a more representative, nuanced, and solution-oriented public conversation on the climate crisis. These women offer a spectrum of ideas and insights for how we can rapidly, radically reshape society. Intermixing essays with poetry and art, this book is both a balm and a guide for knowing and holding what has been done to the world, while bolstering our resolve never to give up on one another or our collective future. We must summon truth, courage, and solutions to turn away from the brink and toward life-giving possibility. Curated by two climate leaders, the book is a collection and celebration of visionaries who are leading us on a path toward all we can save. Or, Entangled Life by Merlin Sheldrake. When we think of fungi, we'd likely think of mushrooms. But mushrooms are only fruiting bodies, analogous to apples on a tree. Most fungi live out of sight, yet make up a massively diverse kingdom of organisms that supports and sustains nearly all living systems. Fungi provide a key to understanding the planet on which we live, and the ways we think, feel, and behave. In Entangled Life, the biologist Merlin Sheldrake shows us the world from a fungal point of view. Sheldrake's exploration takes us from yeast to psychedelics, to the fungi that range for miles underground and are the largest organisms on the planet, to those that link plants together in complex networks known as the Wood Wide Web, to those that infiltrate and manipulate insect bodies with devastating precision. Bonus segment! My personal favorite Goodreads list Braiding Sweetgrass is on is Ecosocialism and Degrowth. Happy reading, everyone! And now we get to the part of the podcast where I attempt to grasp a huge concept and narrow a huge field down into a digestible chunk. I apologize if I miss anything important or misconstrue the science. Today's library tidbit is on climate change. Let's start at the beginning. What is climate change? According to NASA, climate change is a long-term change in the average weather patterns that have come to define Earth's local, regional, and global climates. Global warming is a long-term heating of the Earth caused by human activity since the Industrial Revolution. The burning of fossil fuels has added unprecedented levels of CO2 to the atmosphere, which is causing rapid global warming. The Earth has gone through several periods of climate change during its history. It is believed, based on geological records, that 2,400 to 2,100 million years ago, during the Paleoproterozoic era, that the Earth's surface froze over in response to the atmosphere and the oceans experiencing a rise in oxygen. The event that is believed to have caused the Huronian glaciation is referred to by a few different things, but most often the Great Oxidation Event, or the GOE. The rise in oxygen in the atmosphere over the next hundreds of millions of years caused several different glaciation periods and mass extinction events. The differences between them being uninteresting unless you're studying prehistoric geology or paleontology. Note, paleontologists do not just study dinosaurs, but all fossilized animal, plant, bacterial, and virus. Around 250 million years ago, the Great Dying, or the Permian-Triassic extinction event, occurred. This event saw the most extreme mass extinction event to ever occur on Earth to date, with the extinction of an estimated 83% of all genera. Genera is the plural form of genus, which if you remember way back to biology, is the rank above species in the taxonomic ranks. Reasons for this mass extinction event are unknown, but models using the available data say that it would have been caused by ocean acidification. The reason for this acidification is unknown. At about 199 million years ago, the Triassic period ends and the Jurassic period begins. The Jurassic period is also the age of the dinosaurs. Scientists widely believe that the cause of the mass extinction that ended the Triassic period was increased volcanic activity in the Central Atlantic magmatic province. This volcanic activity released large amounts of CO2 into the atmosphere, raising the overall temperature of the Earth and causing ocean acidification. In general, times of extreme cooling of the Earth have been caused by raised oxygen levels in the atmosphere and the oceans, and times of extreme warming have been caused by raised CO2 levels in the atmosphere and the oceans. At about 66 million years ago, the Cretaceous period ended and the Paleogene period began. This also marked the end of the Mesozoic era and the beginning of the Cenozoic era. This is also the event that caused the extinction of all dinosaurs except for birds. There are a few theories behind the climate change that caused this mass extinction event. One is a meteoric impact at the Chicxulub crater, which is large enough to impact the climate of the planet and lead to potential extinction. The second is the Deccan Traps in India, a large range of volcanic activity which started erupting around the same time period and could have led to climate change large enough to cause mass extinction. The third theory is a combination of the meteoric impact and volcanic activity, which could have led to climate change and mass extinction. The mass extinction would have been caused by both an impact winter and by the resulting rise in CO2. The impact of volcanic activity would have caused an inability for photosynthesis. As the winter started dissipating, the lack of oxygen and the rise of CO2 would cause a greenhouse effect. There is a pattern to these mass extinctions. Throughout known and guessed at in unknown history, there have been glacial periods, also known as ice ages. There are many believed causes for glacial periods. One such is the change in ocean currents due to a warming Earth. When Earth hits a certain temperature, ice melts and runs into the ocean. The rising temperature of the ocean affects the circulation cells or wind. The wind at the equator is what pulls warm temperatures from the equator much further north, like the Gulf Stream. This was briefly explained in episode 30's tidbit on the movement of hurricanes. I'm still hoping a meteorologist will explain that to me. Other factors that cause glacial periods are the shifting of continents and how high continents are. Changes in geography affect wind patterns as well. The final believed cause of glacial periods is the amount of CO2 that is in the atmosphere. The major way that CO2 is removed from the atmosphere is through burial of matter, such as when tectonic plates collide. The most recent major climate change that has led to mass extinction is global warming. Global warming is a human-made effect. It started during the Industrial Revolution. As human industry has grown, we have released more and more CO2 into the atmosphere. We are seeing the acidification of the oceans. This acidification leads to organisms being unable to form protective shells. This relates to a chain of mass extinction in marine life and less oxygen being released from the ocean. And this is called a positive effect. Less oxygen leads to more CO2, which leads to less oxygen, and so forth. Global warming is also causing the ice caps to melt, raising not only the overall depth of the ocean, but also the temperature of the oceans. As the oceans rise in temperature, the frozen methane gas found in its depths thaws. Methane is another greenhouse gas that causes a positive feedback loop and leads to more global warming. We are currently living in the Holocene extinction event, also referred to as the sixth mass extinction. Unlike prior extinction events that were caused by natural forces, such as meteors or volcanic events, or the oxygenation of our atmosphere, this extinction event is being caused solely by humans. Some of this extinction was caused by overhunting or overfishing or other poor resource management by humans. Other extinctions have been caused by loss of animal habitats caused by humans with poor resource management. However, we are now seeing the threat of extinction caused solely from human-created global warming. If we do not change things soon, the oceans will acidify, which will cause mass extinctions of ocean life and also lead to deoxygenation. Humans have roughly a decade to reverse or stop global warming before it is completely out of our hands, and so far, the people who may be able to enact that on a large enough scale to work have done nothing. We are already seeing the effects of global warming. Pacific island nations are quite literally drowning. The governments of some of these nations have purchased lands in other nations so that their people will have a place to live once their islands have been completely overtaken by the rising sea. Kiribati and Tuvalu are among the first ocean-dwelling nations that are threatened with becoming climate refugees. However, flooding in Bangladesh and desertification in Africa, both exacerbated by global warming, will force more climate refugees. I grew up near the Cuyahoga River. Some people know this, but that river caught on fire in 1969. This is one of 13 times that particular river caught on fire. It was so polluted that the river itself, not the surrounding areas, not boats or crafts on the river, no, the river itself caught fire. This fire helped to push through the Clean Water Act and the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency. It took until 2019 for fish caught in the river to be declared safe to eat by the government. I mention this because it took 50 years for one river, polluted by humans, to be made clean again. We have a decade to show extreme reversal of CO2 output if we want a clean planet to live on. The only way that we will get there is if everyone, in an equitable way, reduces the planet's CO2 output. This needs to be done at a micro or personal level, as well as at the macro or governmental slash industrial level. Developed countries especially need to be moving on this. To learn more about what our government can be doing, everyone should read up on the Paris Agreement. The Paris Agreement is the international agreement formed to address global warming. As Floridians, we should be extra concerned and vocal about reversing global warming. Much of Florida will be underwater if the polar ice melts. Additionally, rising ocean temperatures has meant more and stronger hurricanes. The last few seasons of hurricanes have seen unprecedented amounts of storms and has seen storms that have strengthened far beyond predictions. Storm predictions are based on past knowledge, but rising temperatures make that data incomplete. Additionally, the acidification of the oceans will lead to mass extinctions of marine life, which is something that a lot of Floridians rely on for both food and employment. Climate change has happened throughout the history of our planet, but global warming is human-made climate change, and therefore, unlike nature-caused changes like meteors and volcanoes, could be averted. To learn more about what we can do, you should definitely check out All We Can Save from the Reader's Advisory. And now it's time for Book Traveler, with Victor.
Bienvenidos de regreso a Viajero de Libros. En este episodio les voy a hablar sobre un nuevo libro que tenemos en la colección en español, que se titula Mundo Cruel, por Luis Negrón. La sinopsis. Si Mundo Cruel no fuese una espléndida colección de relatos sobre las variedades de la experiencia homosexual, este libro podría subtitularse Estudio de la Naturaleza Humana. Porque esa experiencia no es aquí una identidad cerrada, sino un vivir abierto. Esa experiencia es también la quien juzga de la depravación ajena y la del propio depravo que observa la danza de la rectitud carnal. Ese más allá, esa mascarada. Pero este libro no es un ensayo, y por eso está escrito desde los sujetos, o mejor dicho, desde múltiples subjetividades complejas, jugosas, contradictorias, exasperantes y únicas. Así es la literatura, que cuando lo retalaba, solo se manifestaba desde el eterno presente de los individuos. Y en ese caso, desde Puerto Rico, un escenario universal donde los haya. Mundo Cruel fue traducido al inglés por Gilles Neville y ganó el premio Lambda por Ficción General Gay. En mi opinión, Mundo Cruel es una serie de 9 historias sobre la experiencia gay en Puerto Rico. Estas historias son, a primera vista, una serie de voces sarcásticas y personalidades extravagantes. Pero a medida que vas leyendo, aprendes sobre la vida y los sucesos sexuales que ocurren en una pequeña comunidad de Puerto Rico. Un lugar donde la homosexualidad, o de hecho cualquier cosa sexualmente apartada del estándar heterosexual, se encuentra con duda, miedo, repulsión y en muchos casos, violencia. Hay sexo en las historias, bastante, pero estas no son historias eróticas, ni son sobre sexo. Las historias también tienen risa, ironía, tristeza y belleza. El lector conoce el anhelo de las personas marginadas. Compartimos oscuros secretos en la cálida brisa de una noche puertorriqueña y observamos con asombro u horror cómo los personajes representan su vida cotidiana única. No saben que son únicos y sus pasiones, fracasos y triunfos se revelan solo porque el autor se toma el tiempo de explorar sus historias. Sin dar mucho de la trama, uno de mis cuentos favoritos fue El vampiro de Moca, una historia de amor no correspondido y masculinidad percibida, donde la masculinidad tóxica se encarga de destruir relaciones. No todos los finales son felices, pero las voces en esta colección de historias son auténticas y difíciles de olvidar. Y es por eso que deberíamos leer este libro. Queda muy recomendado. Es todo por hoy. Hasta la próxima edición de Viajero de Libros. Hasta luego.
Thanks, Victor, for another great book review. Remember, if you happen to not know Spanish, check out the English language translation in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Check out our events calendar for more virtual programming opportunities. Stay safe, wear a mask when you come inside the library, and we'll talk to you again soon. Fungi pervude.